First up, we have Adam and Martin will be presenting on blue snarfing. There are two changes to the schedule you should be aware of. The first is Ophir wasn't able to make it to DEF CON today, so 0 day defense right now. Instead of Ophir, we're having Philip Halam Barker. And then at 10 o'clock in the TurboTalks room next door, instead of Ophir, we'll be having Richard Thieme will be speaking. So those are the only changes to the schedule that we are aware of at this time. More information can be had at registration, and I'll turn the time over to these guys.
Thank you. Okay. Can you hear me at the back there? Yes? Do you want to check the volume? How's that?
Should put it up.
That's, I think, number 5. Check, check. How's that? Hi, good morning. My name's Adam Lowe. I'm Chief Security Officer for AL Digital and The Bunker. And this is Martin, who will introduce himself, because there's no way I can pronounce that.
Hi, my name's Martin. I'm from Salzburg Research, Austria. And I'm mainly concerned about the demonstration today. Therefore, I would like to ask you to switch your Bluetooth on if you have it. So we promise we won't attack you due to legal issues, but just to show the people how what this would be, what kind of issue this would be to the people here. Thanks.
Okay, today we're going to talk about Bluetooth. I'll go into some detail about what Bluetooth actually is, because I don't think it's taken off quite the way over here as it has in Europe. We'll look at the devices we've looked at, the attacks we've come up with, the industry responses and defences. By defences, I don't mean your defence against the attacks, I mean their defensive position. Legal issues arising out of those positions, which are interesting, and obviously some conclusions. So Bluetooth is basically a wire replacement technology. It's designed to replace all this clutter that's lying around on the desk. It's low power, uses the same frequency as Wi-Fi, and a low data rate, about a megabit. It's defined by the Bluetooth Special Interest Group, and they're basically a trade association. They own the IP, and they give out licenses. So you, as an individual, you can join up to the Bluetooth SIG, and that's free, which means you then have the right to use the Bluetooth logos and Bluetooth name in your promotions. So if, for example, I was to release a tool, I could have the official Bluetooth stamp on it, which is nice. So the main members who actually get to pay, people like IBM, Intel, and so on, and they help to define the standards. There's two websites, one for the consumer and one for members of the SIG, which you have to sign up to get access to anything useful. You have to be a member, and that's on the technical site, which is bluetooth.org. Sorry, my phone's going to be running during this because I've got to actually see the call later on during the demo, so it will make strange noises from time to time, probably. Okay, so there's three issues that have arisen with Bluetooth recently. The first is bluejacking, and that's by far the most common in the UK at the moment. It's a slight misnomer. Bluejacking implies someone's taking over your, you know, hijacking your phone. That's not the case. What they're doing is just sending you messages, and I believe it's got that name because the first guy to publicize the idea called himself Bluejack on a website, and so it picked up that name. That's the downside of asking you to leave your phones on, I guess. So like all good technology, it's immediately used to promote sex, of course. So the first thing that's come along is a phenomenon called toothing. And if you Google for toothing, you'll find all these weird websites where people describe experiences where they go out on trains or you know, just in public, and they set up a casual liaison and go and go for it in the toilets or something. Pretty strange stuff. So because of that, what's happening is lots of people are going around with their phones in people are actually asking for phones that can be left in discoverable mode, specifically for that reason, so that they can walk around and create these connections. And so then, because of that, I was looking at Bluetooth, and I found that we could go further than that. Instead of just sending you messages, we could start pulling stuff off your phone. And I termed that blue snarfing, which is basically the original the word snarf is old slang for taking an unauthorized copy from a network. So just stick that with blue, and you've got blue snarf. So basically, what I can do with blue snarfing is copy data, your phone book, your calendar, IMEI, which is the unique identity of your phone. Used to be used in phone cloning. It's not so relevant on GSM phones, but probably affects networks where you don't have a SIM card, so it may still be an issue over here. If you've got images in your phone, potentially I can get those too. Blue bugging is an extension of blue snarfing, and in fact was discovered by Martin when he was trying to replicate some work that I did. I mean, maybe you want to explain a bit more about that?
Later. Oh, when I'm demonstrating.
Okay, fine. So basically Martin did some work to see how big a risk it was in the real world, and he was trying to reproduce the work I had done because I hadn't published how I'm doing it, so he had to independently discover the same problems, and actually turned out he discovered a few more. So we've been working together on that. Now with his attacks, we go a bit further. We can actually take over the phone and use the all the serial command sets, so the AT commands for dialing, reading, writing, sending SMSs, setting up diverts, and so on. So it's quite extensive what can be done with that. So the devices we've looked at predominantly are mobile phones, and the reason that they're an issue, if you saw the keynote speech yesterday about deperimetrization, that's the problem I have as security officer for the bank. Obviously my job is to secure my perimeter. But what I was finding is my staff are increasingly taking that perimeter away with them. So you've got sysadmins who are using mobile phones as a gateway of last resort to get into the network if there's no coverage where they happen to be. You've got salespeople taking contacts and diary entries away with them. And so the issue was, becoming a worry how much data is leaking out of the business and whether those devices could be used as gateways to get back into the business. Now recently we had a change in law for driving in the UK, which means you can no longer use a mobile phone while you're driving. So handsets became de rigueur, and Bluetooth obviously is very convenient for that. You haven't got wires getting in the way when you're changing gear. We have these things called gear sticks in the UK. So but it's nice. Bluetooth is good for that kind of stuff. So that became even more of an issue. All my staff wanted to use Bluetooth headsets, so we had to look at the issue in detail. And because of those law changes, and just generally, I think Bluetooth's been being pushed in the UK and in Europe. There's a huge, the amount of devices in Europe is phenomenal. You cannot go out in London without being in range of a Bluetooth device. And the Bluetooth SIG are claiming 2 million devices a week entering the market. And they say in the US there'll be 30% of all new phones entering the market will be Bluetooth enabled by next year. So when we first published the problems, the three main responses we got from the general public was like, first one, well, who cares? There's nothing in my phone that's particularly relevant. And actually what I found when I tested that with most people, they think there's nothing in their phone, but as soon as you actually go and read all the data out of their phone book, it's like, oh yeah, that's that entry I forgot about. And I tried it on a friend of mine who's a manageress of a coffee shop, and she had the addresses of three different coffee shops, the door pin codes and the alarm codes for each shop. So, I think she should care about that. Second reaction is, you're supposed to enter a password or something on you. This, it can't be done. Well, yeah, that's what's supposed to happen. But the whole point is we're bypassing that authentication. And finally, well, okay, you're selling a fix. Obviously, you're not doing this just for the hell of it. So you want money, so I'm going to dismiss it because you're a bad guy. We can't fix this. You know, this is up to the phone companies to fix. It's closed source stuff. All we can do is bring it to their attention. And even if I was, you know, you can be as cynical as you like, but you still have a problem. So, okay, so the attacks in detail. Blue Snarfing, we can steal your data, we can steal your whole calendar appointment, any images associated with appointments. So if you put a picture of the person you're meeting in your calendar, we'll get that picture. Same with phone books, names, addresses, numbers, and as I've said, alarm codes and stuff like that. Now, I think Bruce Schneier commented on this in the press recently, and his comment was, people are starting to use phones and PDAs as kind of portable data banks, and they just put everything in there because they assume it's safe. You know, that's your device, you keep it with you, as long as it's with you and you've got it in your pocket, you know the data's safe. Well, that's no longer true. As long as we get within range, then we can have it. We can read your messaging, SMS text messaging, and those are increasingly being used for authentication. So you go to web portals and and you associate your phone number with an account on the web. They then send you an SMS with your password, and your authentication secret is now stored on the phone, which if I can read your SMSs, I can read your secret, I can get into your web account. And the big one, of course, is bugging. Now, a phone is a very efficient device for listening to conversations. It has a microphone in it. It's portable and it's already on your mark. So you want to listen to someone. If I can turn his phone into a bug, then I'm away. And there's two ways we can do that. One is to just listen to the conversation around that person. So, you know, if the phone's on the table, we can hear everything that's going on, or if it's in his pocket. The other is we actually want to listen to a specific conversation. We want the guy to phone his office and then hear both sides of the conversation. So what we can do is a man-in-the-middle attack where we change the stored number in his phone. So instead of phoning the office, he's actually phoning my gateway, which then phones his office, connects the two together and records what's going on in between. So Martin is now going to demonstrate both of these attacks.
So what you see here is that we have set up a camera pointing at that Nokia phone, which you can see there. It's for our second demonstration. The first demonstration will be about the blue bugging. One person in this room has a phone which we set up to be invisible.
Yeah, for legal reasons we're using a pre-agreed subject. So our sister conference have lent us a goon to play with, so Agent Right. X is going to be our mark for today.
Right. So hopefully it's working. We had some trouble in the beginning. So what happens now is that I just called a little script, which didn't work. The intention was to contact the phone and send an AT command via this interface, which is insecure. And, oh,
of course,
as it was supposed to be. And setting up a voice connection to a phone we have here on our table, next to the microphone. So what should have happened is that this person left the room, was having secret conversations, and we were able to eavesdrop them. So we give it one more try.
Just stick the phone in your pocket. What?
So this is a very casual thing. Nobody knows it's him.
Okay, someone's bluejacked us. That's pretty cool. Thank you, Shmoo. Bluejacked. So they've just sent us a message. So what's happened is our connection's blocked until he answers the question, basically. So, normally. It's going to be worse at DEFCON, you realise that? No. Try that again. Do you want to hit it?
So
control C that and hit it.
Okay. one more trial. Oh.
Okay, so that phone has now been instructed to call me, so I should receive a call.
Now we set up that mobile blue bug. In theory.
Never do lab demos.
Now, one more try. Not working. Okay, let's move on to the second demo, which is
do that one and we'll come back.
Also quite impressive. Right. We probably could have everybody. But we can do that afterwards. Maybe because we are having time issues. So what you see here,
just put it in.
As I said before, it's a Nokia phone which is known to be very vulnerable. It's possible to connect it and you will see what happens on the display. There's almost no indication that we are connecting to that phone. So if it's in the pocket, so we named this this Bluetooth node charger, so nobody would assume somebody else is trying to connect to the phone. So being connected to a charger is strange if you're on the way, but people won't get nervous. So we are connected now. The only indication is that we have a headset symbol on the display. Right. I opened up that Gnocchi application, which is pretty much standard. Everybody could use it. So this is just to demonstrate how easy these attacks could work. What I will do now is opening up the contacts window. I will read now all the contacts from the phone, which is here. See, nothing happens to the phone, which is still connected, which is indicated by that little icon. We're reading now the phone memory and the numbers from the SIM memory, and you see them here. We could even modify these numbers, as Alex said before, and put them back on the phone. So this is the one part, and the second part I wanted to show is that we even are in the position to read the SMS from the phone. So, hello from Helsinki. Airtrans have changed my flights, now going to Mönchengladbach, blah blah. So, this is
the inbox, you'll get the rest of
it. Yeah. It's just soaking them out a little slowly, but it's working. So what happens next is when we disconnect from the phone.
We can, of course, at this point use that phone and that same interface to actually send SMS.
Yeah, we could send SMSs as well. Maybe to numbers out of the phone book, so this could be very confusing. So when I disconnect Gnocchi, the phone will emit a beep. You won't hear it probably. But that makes people again look on the display, but it says just disconnect the charger so people won't think to. Okay, so what else I have to show you is the application which I used at CeVIT in order to find all the people walking by. There has been a report saying that there were 1,200 phones about, of which we got 50 phones connected to, and did some experiments just like sending SMS. So this application is not set to attack any of the phones here, but what you see is just a listing of all the names we found, and by the MAC address or by the Bluetooth device address we are able to tell in some cases which manufacturer this is. So this is a first thing, whether to find out this device would be vulnerable or not. So the red dot on the right hand side means that there is no data actually, because we were not attacking the devices. But I'm sure that here are at least three devices which I saw that are for sure vulnerable. So this would have worked for most of the Nokias you see on here, and partly for the Sony Ericsson phones. So So that's pretty much it. So
do you want to try the bug again?
Sorry?
Try the bug again. What do you do? The bug.
Oh, we give the blue bug one more try because it's quite impressive.
Does that also include the photos and everything would be included?
Yeah, that's also included. We would be able to download them via OBEX. That's right.
Yeah, well, actually, in the case of photos, at the moment, they have to be associated with an object in the either the phone book or the calendar. We don't get direct access to the media store. But I'll come on to escalation of privilege attacks in a bit. So.
Oh,
here we go.
Bluebug in action. So we pick up the phone, which lies on our table, and we are now able to listen while... just switch it open. Slip it open. So, we are now listening to secret conversations.
So, X has left the room now, and because this is a GSM call, it doesn't matter how far out of range he gets, we only need range for the initial setup. So now it's going over the network. He can go down to the casino, he can get in a cab, he can go off to Alexis Park. Until he notices that that connection is live and ends it, we own it. This could be anywhere. So this could be, I could be locally setting up the bug for someone sitting in Tokyo that wants to know what's going on, because again, it's just a call. And the best of all is he's paying for it. So.
So there's a question. Yes.
Okay. There'll be a standard call in progress. But for doing initial setup, all you get is a little blue triangle on the top of the phone. So right. I'll kill that now.
We debug him again. So
yeah. I'm glad that.
For sending SMS, this is also as Adam mentioned before. But sending SMS leaves no indication on the phone. There's no SMS in the outbox which you send via this interface, so nobody could tell unless having a bill just being charged for that SMS.
Yeah, first you hear is in a month's time when you get your bill.
Another question?
Yes, there will be. So, the number you call wants to be obfuscated in some way. You have a throwaway phone or
right.
You send it to a phone that then diverts to somewhere else. But, yeah. Okay, so I will...
So we switch back.
Okay, so that's the demonstration of those two types of attack. The details of what can be done with them, obviously with the voice calls, as well as actually using it as a bugging device, you can use it to steal money. Dialing premium rate numbers, we don't care about the voice channel, we're not going to send it anywhere, we don't want to actually listen to that conversation, we just want the call to last as long as possible because we're earning $2.75 a minute while it's going on. In the UK there's actually no limit. You can arrange for single drop numbers where as soon as you ring that number it charges you $10 or $20 or whatever. And again, the first they'll know about it is when they get their bill in a month's time. So the standard kind of fraud setup would be you have a shell company that harvests as much as it can before it gets caught, and then it's just an empty office. So we only need access for 10 seconds or so to get that call going. For long distance, you do want the voice channel because you actually want to have a conversation. So what you're doing is using somebody else's phone to call your grandmother in Australia, and you're paying for you're not paying for anything because we're using the headset profile. So basically we use the Bluetooth channel for the voice. So we have to stay within range for that to work. However, we can also just set up a call forward on the phone. So we connect to the phone and say forward all calls to Granny in Australia. Then I make a local call to this guy, maybe on the network where they don't charge for local calls, and he's paying for my call to Australia. Yeah, again, that will all appear in, so you only want to call people that you want to get in trouble, basically. So. Listening to voicemail, again, you have to stay in range because you do care about the voice channel, so you need the headset channel. but normally you're going to bypass the authentication. So if you dial into voicemail from an unknown phone, it's going to ask you for a PIN number. But if you're dialing in from your own phone, typically a voicemail system will just let you straight in because it recognizes the CLI. So I can use that to listen to your messages, delete them before you hear them, potentially. Again, service theft with SMS. You can send SMS text messages to premium rate services where you get charged per drop. Again, only takes a few seconds. So connect to the phone, send the message, make myself 275. And you can actually set them to be as many parts as you want, so that will just keep going and clocking up. Potentially, you could use someone's phone as an SMS spam gateway, just sending out unsolicited mail via SMS. And obviously, impersonation of the victim, because it appears to have come from that guy's phone. So if you are sending out instructions to someone, you know, meet me at position X-ray Tango, then they're going to think it came from the real person. I briefly touched on authentication, and one of the more worrying aspects of that, apart from the web portals where you can gain access to email accounts and other things, there's actually services now in the UK where you can sign up your staff to be tracked, so, or your children or your wife or whatever, so, or some other woman. You go to the website, you type in the phone number. To check that you are actually authorized to track that phone, it will send you an SMS message and say, do you want this to happen? And you reply saying, yeah. So because I can control your SMS, I can connect to your phone, initiate that, receive the incoming message, blow it away from your store so you don't see it anymore, reply, and I'm now authenticated. So your phone is now a tracking device. And I can go to a website, and as long as your phone is on, it will show me. So this is one I did back in London. You might be able to see it just down by the vertical yellow road there. There's a little number one, and that's where it thought I was. Where I actually was about 100 meters. So it's close enough that I can drive to that location, fire up my Bluetooth, drive around a bit till I find you. So, you know, that, and that's anywhere in the world, doesn't matter, or anywhere in where this service is active. So at the moment, this particular service is a UK-only thing, but that phone could be anywhere in the UK, 24 hours a day, as long as it's switched on, that website will tell me where it is. Okay, the other service theft is gateways, using the built-in data network facilities of the phone, so either the built-in modem, or GPRS. Now, with modems, I talked about the perimeter of your network. If you've got a well set up network, you're going to at least defend against random incoming war dialed calls. So you're only going to accept connections from people you recognize. Now, if I've just scanned the phone book of a network admin and I've got his data numbers and I use his phone to dial into his network, that network's going to let me in because it recognizes the incoming CLI. So I've just bypassed the first layer of security on your dial-up. The other thing is the GPRS. Obviously, you can use it to gain access to the internet. And again, potentially abuse it for cracking or spamming. Okay, so we published all this stuff. Initially, we posted, back in November last year, we posted to the Bluetooth SIG Security Expert Group, which is a group that operates from their technical website, the Bluetooth.org website. And what I expected to happen was, we basically said, there's a bunch of phones, these are the problems, get in touch, we'll tell you what the problem is. And I really expected the mobile phone manufacturers to be in touch straight away and try and find out what the problems were. 2 weeks later, nothing had happened, and I had a more detailed look at the expert group postings. And there was a load of people posting questions dating back to April that year, and absolutely no response from anyone. So it was basically a black hole. So we posted to BugTrack. And what then happened is Nokia got in touch within 24 hours. And they were good. They took it seriously. Their security guy got in touch, we exchanged information. I worked with them over the next couple of weeks to help them get the cracks running in their lab and they could have a look at the problems. Shortly afterwards, TDK published a long and detailed explanation as to why this was all not possible. I think it's on the register. You can find it there, and it was fairly detailed. But they'd never spoken to us, so I don't know, you know, how they actually got their opinions. That caused a little bit of publicity. So then the Bluetooth SIG woke up and got in touch. And you know, obviously the people who really are concerned about this is their marketing department. So I got a call from their press officer and their marketing people, and they assured me that they were going to take this really seriously and go back to the manufacturers and make sure stuff was being done. And so sure enough, over the next couple of weeks, I got loads of calls from the Bluetooth SIG, about a dozen in all, again, all from marketing people. I never got a single call from any security or technical people. So Sony Ericsson not only didn't get in touch, but refused to speak to us. We wrote to them, emailed them, phoned them, and got absolutely nothing. And eventually I got a letter back saying, you know, we have our own security department, thank you, thanks for your interest, we're dealing with it. A few months later they issued a press release saying they had fixed all the problems. But again, they hadn't talked to us, so they didn't actually know for sure what the problems were. So, you know, I made an effort to get in touch with them, and I finally got through to someone. I tried to speak to their equivalent of the Nokia guy, the security, the head of security, and they don't have one. So I was put through to a project manager, or product manager, rather, who eventually condescended to let me tell him what the problem was. And it turned out that actually they hadn't fixed it, they'd fixed another problem. So, you know, I said, well, you know, send me a phone and we'll have a look at it and see if it works. And his suggestion was I go to the shop and buy one. So I need more broken phones. Siemens and Motorola actually took a very responsible position and got in touch with us direct and said, okay, we've got some new phones coming out with Bluetooth. Will you look at them and tell us if there's an issue? Siemens, there were no issues. They seemed to be invulnerable to the attacks. Motorola was interesting. They have a new phone called the V600, which you may have over here. And that was invulnerable to my attack, and it was invulnerable to Martin's attack. But when we combined the two attacks, we could use one to leverage the other, and we got into it. So that actually proved something we believed from the beginning, that because of the granularity within the phones or in the Bluetooth controls, you can use one service to escalate privilege to another. And that was an interesting experiment because that proved that was true. Okay, so they then came back with this. This all started to get out in the press and people were talking about it. And so the industry had to start coming up with actual defenses. And so what they cited was basically distance. I'll go through these in detail, but distance, limited number of models, it's an implementation issue, it's not Bluetooth per se. You need all kinds of gear to do these attacks, it's going to look really suspicious. And devices don't go around in vulnerable mode. Even if they do, you can change the name and hide them. So you change it to secret and you're safe. It's easier to steal the phone, which is one of the weirdest. It's far-fetched, and even if it's true, it's a very low risk. Okay, so distance there, the range of Bluetooth is 10 meters. So they say you have to be really close to do this. 10 meters is 30 feet. You know, so 10 meters is kind of to the third, fourth row here. And actually, that's a nominal minimum anyway. That's the minimum you can expect it to work at. The device will actually work at a much greater range, of course. And it's a spherical range, so it's 10 meters ahead of me, 10 meters behind me, to the left, to the right, above and below. So if I'm in an office building, I can typically capture more than one floor around me. If you're in a bus, you'll get the whole of the bus. And in practice, with standard dongles, it's actually closer to 40 meters, not 10 meters. So that easily covers this whole room. As you saw when we finally got that working, you know, Agent X was close to the back there. And with one of these dongles with an external antenna, 90 meters. And that's even though we're talking to a standard phone with nothing special on the phone, the extra gain on that gives us more sensitivity and more power, so we still attack standard devices at greater range. Because it's 2.4, there's a load of antennas out there for Wi-Fi, so we can start bolting them on. There's guys at a show in Amsterdam I was at a few weeks ago where they have a Bluetooth-specific antenna which is now giving them 250 meters. And I've heard of an experiment where two directional antennas were done to a range of 2 miles when they were actually tuned and pointed to each other. So range is good. Limited number of models. Okay, they said, yeah, this is true, but it's, you know, you've given us a list of models and there's only a few of them, so don't worry about it. Well, yeah, but those are the most popular phones in Europe. When you go out on the street, 70% to 80% of the phones you see will be one of those models. The Nokia 6310 and 8910 series are the standard businessman's phone. You know, corporate accounts will buy these by the thousand. The T610 is the kind of trendy lifestyle phone, so it's the one that we were using, the square one with a camera in it. I think you've got one there, haven't you? So one of those. And it's, yeah, very trendy in Europe. Watch where you go tonight. Very trendy, lots of people using them. So, it's true, it's only a few models, but they're the main ones. It's an implementation issue, it's not Bluetooth itself. So that was the SIG's defense. Well, yeah, but so what? It's vulnerable. An end user isn't going to care that it's broken and they're not going to finger point at whose problem it is. And actually, in practice, Ollie Whitehouse from At Stake has found some fundamental vulnerabilities in the crypto. So it looks like even more phones will be vulnerable because he's not looking at, if we can implement the cracks that he's done, we don't have to go for specific phones anymore. We've got the whole of Bluetooth. So. Specialist equipment. Okay, obviously you need to go around with huge great tanks full of gear and trucks with dongles on the top and so on. Well, that's not true. I mean, you know, the attack we're doing here, we've got all our stuff laid out, but it's just a standard laptop with a standard Bluetooth dongle. We didn't know anything about Bluetooth when we started doing this. We're just poking around at the protocols because they're there and because we're geeks and that's what we do. We use mostly standard software off the internet, so all the Bluetooth stacks are already done. We just did some minor modifications and played around. And there are tools already available for PDAs for doing bluejacking, and no doubt when these techniques are better known, they will be incorporated into PDA software. Suspicious behavior. Yeah, clearly, you know, walking around, I guess you all noticed me at lunch yesterday acting very suspiciously. The attack's automated, it's running on a laptop, it's in a bag. In fact, I've got some statistics from when I went into the Houses of Parliament doing this attack. And to get in the UK, our police they're not armed. So to get into the Houses of Parliament, you actually have to go through an armed cordon and get searched by armed police. And so these guys are better trained than your normal cops. And they searched me, they put my bag through the X-ray machine, waved me through, I walked in, bag on shoulder, walked around, looked at the nice building, stuck around for about 15 minutes and left. So clearly very suspicious behavior. I was not arrested. And because it's a radio attack, it's not line of sight. You don't even have to be visible to the person you're targeting. They can be the other side of the door. And because the range is greater than admitted, your coverage is much wider for people who are actually out of your line of sight. I think this cable's bust. Devices are not always in vulnerable mode, and they must be discoverable. Well, that's true if you're going for casual attacks. Even if your device is not discoverable, you can attack it if you know the MAC address. The unique address that Martin put in to attack that phone every Bluetooth phone has a unique address. And if you know the manufacturer, the range of those addresses is you know, within a reasonable amount that can be brute forced. And the Shmoo who are here, I don't know if they're going to be doing any talks, any stuff during their talk on this, but they have a tool which helps to track down those addresses and brute force phones around you, and At Stake have a tool called Red Fang which does the same thing. In practice, if you have a Bluetooth device and you pair it with anything, the instructions you get given for doing the pairing will typically leave it discoverable. You get to the end and they don't say, right, now hide it again. Because you know, it's all exciting and you've just done your headset or whatever and you're finished, you want to go off and play. So even if you are thinking about security, you wouldn't necessarily know to turn that off again. So most people leave it there. And the phenomena of bluejacking is actually actively encouraging people to do it. You know, it's becoming a marketing thing. It's become a bit of a cult thing in the UK. And there is kind of sideways marketing going on, getting people to do bluejacking. So typically, devices are actually left in vulnerable mode. One of the defenses TDK came up with was you change the name. The way we're determining if a device is vulnerable or not is by looking at the default name. If it says I'm a Nokia 6310 or I'm a an Ericsson T610, then we know that's a vulnerable model. But an actual malicious attacker wouldn't care. You know, we're only doing that because we want to stay within the law and not actually attack phones. We're doing statistical gathering by looking at the names of the devices. A malicious attacker would just attack it anyway. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But we believe we can also look at the profile of the phone. The way Bluetooth works is you have a connection to the phone and then a number of services you can use called profiles. And each manufacturer publishes a different set of profiles on each model. So potentially, from the list of profiles and which ports they're listening on and other details, you can work out, okay, that's a T610 because that's the profile fingerprint. And we're working on code to do that. Now this is just the most ridiculous one. It's easier to find the phone. You know, this guy came up with statistics about how many phones were left in cabs every year. And so therefore all I had to do was take 10 cab rides and I'd find a phone. Well, you know, I've been riding on cabs and public transport all my life and I've never found a phone. So I don't intend to learn to pickpocket. You know, I would much rather steal your data from here than try and walk up to you and lift your phone. And if I do it electronically, you're not even aware that it's gone. So that data is much more valuable to me because it's not going to get changed. I don't know what far-fetched means. That's just, you know, weird. And, you know, it's not far-fetched. We've demonstrated that it works. But, you know, just to be sure, we went out and did some more testing. So here is Earlscourt tube station. Sorry, the picture's not so great under the light. But this is evening rush hour in London, and what you have here is a train station where different lines converge. So you get people waiting for, you know, 10 to 15 minutes for their train. The range from where I'm standing to that bright yellow spot there is 55 meters. So everybody in that picture is within my range. And I'm just stood at the top of the stairs. You can see I'm just above someone's hat here. And, you know, platform was crowded, so we're all standing there. I'm up there perfectly legitimately with a whole bunch of other people waiting for my train. Attack is in progress while I was taking this picture. Victoria Station, similarly, people coming, looking at the board, see when their train comes in. So they stand around their static targets for a while and then they move away. And again, so that was, it's about 70 meters from where I'm standing to that board. This is a single line station, so people arrive. You can see on the board there it says 3 minutes to the next train. So your target audience will be there for about 3 minutes and then they hop on the next train and they're gone. And so this is, I'm afraid it's cutting a bit, but that scale on the left is basically from 1 to 1,000. And during this trip, I saw a total of 336 devices. Of which 77 were definitely vulnerable. Now, in practice, we think that most of the phones that have had their names changed are also vulnerable, just from the demographics of which phones are sold. We reckon 50 to 70% of all the phones we see are vulnerable models. So that percentage is skewed by the fact that we're only actually counting ones that identify themselves as vulnerable. The blue line there is the period they have to be visible for all of our attacks to be possible. So as you can see, most of the phones have stayed within range for long enough that we could attack them if we wanted to. So that's the timeline moving away as the seconds go on, more of them get on trains and go away. But they stayed mostly within range long enough for us to hit them. So in detail, during the rush hour, so it was an hour and 43 minutes, total devices 336, of which 117 were Sony Ericssons, 44 were T610s, and 168 of those stayed in range for long enough, and 77 of the ones that did stay in range were vulnerable to attack. In the Houses of Parliament, 14 minutes I was in there, and I found 46 phones. And there were several very high-profile people around. There was the ex-Chancellor of the Exchequer standing, you know, just a few yards away. And so, if one of those was his phone, then clearly he was vulnerable. Okay, so it's low risk. Well, we've proved that actually there's a lot of people at risk out there. That there's always people in range. And if you're a targeted individual, then it's high risk because a lot of the defences don't work. If I can attack, if I can find your Bluetooth address, then not being discoverable doesn't help you. And in fact, some devices are always vulnerable. So Nokia have a car kit which cannot be put into non-visible mode. Now, their defence to that was, well, it's a car. You're not going to have time to do anything because it's flying past you. Well, yeah, okay, that's true. So you're low risk from a casual attack. But if you're my target, then you're very high risk because the next time you get in the car, I own you. I'm going to be behind you, and I've done tests on the motorway. It's very easy to get up behind a car and stay within range of that car for long enough to attack it. Okay, so with all this stuff about why we shouldn't be worrying about it, we thought we need a yardstick to measure the risks against and see if really we're just overblowing it and actually it's not that big of a deal. So we took the principles of good security in electronic communications from GCHQ, who tend to know about these things. And they have five principles, basically confidentiality, integrity of the data, availability, authentication, that you can actually track who's done what, and non-repudiation. And our attacks break all five of those principles. So obviously confidentiality, because we can read your data. Integrity, because we can change it. We can edit your phone book records, your SMS message records. Availability, we can make it disappear. Authentication, well, that's the whole point. We're bypassing all your authentication. And non-repudiation, there is no audit trail, so you can't tell who did what. And in other contexts, modification of phone books, we're breaking the integrity of the conversation there. We can crash your phone. We can bypass authentication to other systems by using these attacks. And an interesting one is we have now given you plausible deniability to your phone company in billing. So you get a bill and there's this huge, I didn't call it 900 numbers, and it's like, well, there is now technology that proves that somebody else could have done it. They can no longer say, well, if your phone was in your possession, then you must have made the calls. And, moving on to legal issues. Obviously, this is illegal. You shouldn't be doing it. It's bad. But that's not the only legal issue. When I started talking to some lawyers about this, other things came up, like fiduciary duty. The manufacturers and the networks knowingly shipping phones which have faults on them. If in fact Nokia shipped 90 million phones in the period between November and June, that's after we notified them of the problems. If that costs even only $10 per phone to fix the problem, they have just created a $900 million problem for their shareholders. and potentially they've broken their fiduciary duty by doing that. Data protection. If you knowingly use devices that leak data, are you breaking data protection legislation? Billing. We've covered repudiation of bills. And consequential loss. You know, who's actually responsible for that, ultimately, for that item on your bill? Is that you? Is it the network? Is it Nokia? It's not clear. So, in conclusion, the industry have now kind of come back and said, okay, it is a problem, and we do acknowledge it, and we will fix it, but it's low risk, unless you're a VIP or, you know, a celebrity, and then you should worry about this. Well, you know, we don't buy that, basically. If it's a risk for them, it's a risk for us, too. And, you know, we proved it really is a risk. It does exist. The implementation versus protocol question is utterly irrelevant. Again, you know, you don't care. You're vulnerable. You don't want to be vulnerable. And one of the things that we think will help is better granularity of choice. You know, you shouldn't be just going into a menu and saying Bluetooth is on or off for all services. You need to have the granularity to say, yes, you can connect to my headset, but you can't connect to my address book. Or, you know, you can connect to my address book, but you can't connect to my network gateways. So you need more granularity. And, you know, we've only looked at phones, but, and that's the thing that Bluetooth is mostly in, but if you search on the net for the kind of devices that people are putting Bluetooth into, it's going in everything. It's going in, you know, medical applications, heartbeat monitors, home security, banking. I've seen a thing where, you know, your bank details are stored in a Bluetooth dongle, which are then sent to the teller when you walk up to the counter. And so the implications of poor security in those kind of devices are pretty horrific. I don't want Bluetooth controlling my car, thank you. And this is lunchtime yesterday. I did a scout. You saw me, as I said, acting very suspiciously, being dragged out by the guards. It's quite a low number for a gathering of this size. In Europe, I would expect there to at least be a zero on the end of that, the number of devices. 33 devices is very small for a gathering of 2,000 people. But it's coming. You know, the US is going to have a lot more Bluetooth devices in the coming years. And even so, three of those were vulnerable. So 10% of the small number of phones that were here are definitely vulnerable, and probably actually more like 50%, because they're just devices that have had their names changed. So, yeah. Are there any questions?
Have you done any work on things like Jabra headsets, the wireless?
Okay, the question was, have we done any work on headsets?
Can you qualify that? Jabra, the newest headset,
yeah,
has a hard-coded Bluetooth pin of 0000.
Yeah. We haven't attacked the headsets themselves, but we have used the headset profile to attack other devices. So we pretend to be a headset and use that to connect to another device. I don't know of one. So. Any other questions?